Isn't this sanctuary sweet? That's awesome. I'm thankful because usually when you work with a nonprofit, they like make you fill out 100 pieces of paper and then they literally put red tape in your path. It's actual red tape and they make it really hard for you to do stuff. But Urban Alliance, there's so many cool things happening here. I feel really honored to get to be a part of it and have a service here. Couple announcements of business for us. If any of you have not seen the house that we're buying, it's at 1514 Lay. I would love to walk you through it. We probably need $13,000 more, and it's ours. And then we can begin the process of getting that home to a family. They'll lease it from us for 5 years. We'll save back a huge portion of their lease payments. When that family is mortgage ready, we will give them back that money so they can have a huge down payment on the home. And then they will buy it from us, avoiding PMI, and their payment will probably go down $400 or more. So what kind of organizations can do things like that? Churches, because we don't care about the money, right? And so that's a lot for things like that is one of the reasons we're thankful to be in this space. We couldn't afford this space, and we're not going to try to build this space, and we're not going to throw our time and money into putting up a space so that we can worship. When that stuff's already available, we can use our time and our energy and our resources when people give to try to make that stuff happen. One other thing, the park that the Edison Neighborhood Association gave us on Hayes Park in March, Ashley Joyce Memorial Park, or Ashley Johnson Memorial, Ashley Joyce Memorial Park, we have to take that playground equipment out so that we can start working with the city to make the park better for families and birthday parties. And so I have all the tools. Eric has a trailer. He has a grinder. Just one of these days, we're going to have to knock that out. Like, it's a huge task because it's a huge, nasty piece of park equipment. And so if you're interested in showing up on one of these warm days in November and trying to get that thing out before winter, I would just love the help. We'll organize it and schedule it. So those are the main two things. If you have not ever been to Urban Alliance during the day to see all the stuff they got going on, come by. Come to Chess Club on Tuesday nights. Come to a Momentum thing. Come see. These people are working hard to bring transformation to this neighborhood, and we get to be a part of it, and they trust us to let us be a part of it. And man, I just feel so humble and grateful. A lot of times, churches, we try to invent the change so we can put our sticker on it. I have found in my life the best thing to do is find where good stuff's already happening and then jump on that train. And then you get to be part of really cool stuff. You don't necessarily get all the credit, which we love and our egos love, but you get to be part of the humbling move of watching a God who loves people really, really, really move in a big way. So those are the three things. If you want to get caught up, we don't always record these sermons, but we've been recording them and putting them on the Edison Chapel podcast because they're kind of themed, and we've been going through some of the Old Testament. Today we're in Joshua. We have talked about genocide in the Old Testament, what's going on with that. That's a fun one to listen to. We have talked about Rahab. We have talked about why women always need to be like almost about to be stoned in the Old Testament before they're going to be used by God, and some of that patriarchy and just weird stuff. And so today we're in Joshua 5, which I'm excited about because it's one of my favorite passages in the Bible. It's Joshua 5. If you don't like listening to me, if for after a while you're like, he's kind of boring, just go ahead and read Joshua 5, 13 through 15, and that will take up 15 seconds of your time of listening to me, and you'll have read ahead. I want to share a story with you before we talk about that passage. And that story involves this space, of which today I noticed when I walked in a star hanging from the ceiling. Because at some point, there was a Christmas Eve service in this sanctuary where somebody had the great idea that they're going to talk about the star that the wise men followed that led them to a God who would say, I am going to be with you now, and I will point you the way, and you will meet Emmanuel. Because Jesus is what God has to say. He's the capital W word of God. Jesus is what God has to say. The rest of the Bible, lowercase W word of God, simply leads us to Jesus. And so somebody hung a star up there. They figured out how to get it up there. And they never considered that it would have to come down. And so 35 years later, I found a sermon illustration. And if that's not the Spirit of God, I don't know what is. Those windows are the result of a fire. This place burned down, and they were able to save those windows and put them up there. Beautiful stained glass windows back in the day when we thought Jesus was a white middle-class man. We've learned he was not recently. But back when he was on those stained glass windows, and the reality is those are too beautiful to take down, and they hold a memory of a place. I have a friend who I didn't ask him if I could share some of his story, but heavily involved in alcohol and drugs, arrested driving backwards down 131, meets a Navajo pastor in this sanctuary. Man leads him to Christ, leads him to Jesus. My friend starts walking these streets over 20 years ago, praying for people, bringing them to Jesus. That church, this church at the time, doesn't handle that man very well because, you know, it was a long time ago and he's a Navajo pastor and he's bringing change. And so he gets kind of pushed out of this place, and it limps along. Old dying church of white people who just kind of need some hospice care. And then it's empty. And a nonprofit takes over for $100 a year in the basement. And then the denomination decides, let's sell it to them, let's get it to them. They raise the money, they get this building. They finish this sanctuary with a leaky roof. And then they let this little tiny Edison Chapel gather here on Thursday nights because they see us and they see what we're doing, and they want to partner with other communities who are doing great things, like Youth for Christ. And Travis is here representing and doing a lot of cool things for youth in this neighborhood. And I had the privilege of calling my friend Keith, who's sitting right there, and saying, hey man, this thing has come full circle for you. The place that you experienced the holiness and the grace and the love of Christ for the first time, you're back. And that's a beautiful, holy moment, and it takes eyes to see and notice what God is doing in our lives, because that story is not unique. That story happens all the time. In Joshua chapter 5, we have learned through the past several sessions we've had together that Israel is the lone kindergartner with the wiffle bat, being oppressed by everyone wandering around the desert, and they're being taken on by the high school varsity football team. And for some reason, God keeps moving on their behalf. The weakest, most oppressed people in the history of the world somehow keep surviving, and they say, God is on our side, God is on our side. And we learn that God oftentimes defends the poor and the powerless. Sometimes we interpret that and we say, God's on my side, not on yours. God's on my ancestor's side, not on yours. But it follows the theme that God defends the poor and the powerless. He takes up the cause. Oftentimes we argue about if the Bible has stances on different topics, and we form denominations, and then we split those denominations and form new denominations, and then they split until we're all just in our own churches with our own marquees that says, All are welcome. Some are welcome. I am welcome because we think God is on our side, because we saw it happen with Israel. But when we get to Joshua chapter 5, they're about to take over the military citadel of Jericho, which we've learned is not an ordinary city like Kalamazoo. There's no archaeological evidence that women and children were ever there. We've learned these things. We've learned about statements that say, kill everyone, just means in totality, like telling a seventh grade team, we wiped that team off the face of the earth. No, you didn't. You won a basketball game. And so we're catching up to what's really happening in this place. And before Israel goes and marches around Jericho and blows the trumpets and the walls fall in this little tiny military village of probably 100 or 200 soldiers. Trust me, I've been there. You can't fit that many more in the town. Joshua goes out and he sees something weird. And I want to read that to you. Now, when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went up to him and asked, are you for us or our enemies? Like, we're about to throw down, and you look pretty awesome. Whose side are you on? Neither, he replied, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. Then Joshua fell face down on the ground in reverence and asked him, what message does my Lord have for his servant? The commander of the Lord's army replied, take off your sandals, for the place you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. Can you imagine about being ready to go into war and seeing the most insane, physical, fiery, angelic dude standing out there with a sword? And you're thinking, God's brought us this far. Now we get him. And you go out and you say, whose side are you on? And he says, nobody's. And you say, well, then why are you here? What message do you bring from the creator of the universe? And the angel says, take your shoes off. The place you're standing right now is holy. And I think sometimes we live our lives with the pressures that we have, constantly pitting ourselves against people, constantly wondering, is this person on my side? Where do I stand in this universe? And when bad things happen to us and when hard things happen to us, we enter into these spaces where we just don't know, and we question, did I do something wrong? Did I make God mad? Is this thing happening in my life because God is trying to teach me a lesson? What's going on in my life right now? Is God on my side? Is God on their side? And when we bring that conversation into church, oftentimes it's assumed that God is on the side of the guy with the Carhartt hoodie and the microphone, and so we need to learn from that person so that we can then get God on our side. But even in the most critical moment of Israel's history, where they're going to take down the gate of the promised land, where they've been promised a place that is meant for them to thrive and procreate and build a kingdom and build a nation, when they're going to step into that and there's an enemy who has chariots and horses and tanks and cannons, if you know what I mean, in this critical moment where they need to step into this place that God has promised them, and they say, whose side are you on, God? They hear, no one's. The only reason I'm here is so you can realize that you're in a holy place. And that holy place is where you are. And Joshua's eyes are open, and he sees this moment right here, right now, is holy. And King David writes the Psalms, many of them, and starts with, kill my enemies. I'm sorry, God, don't kill my enemies. Actually, would you please destroy my enemies? They're out to get me. But I worship you, and I'm so sorry I asked you to kill my enemies. He's always in this weird tension of, is God on my side? Is God not on my side? Every time I think God is on my side, I feel so deeply convicted that I feel bad that I have these enemies, and I don't want God to be on their side. But he always finds this place where he's like, search me, search my heart. Change me, open my eyes to let me see who you really are. Because when you read this Old Testament, it's like crazy. God's showing up in places and doing things that no one is expecting. It's like, man, we really need someone to be on our side for this battle. Oh, you're not on anyone's side? You want me to take my shoes off? And God seems to be intervening in weird ways for the most vulnerable. And God always seems to be bringing these things that cause people's hearts to melt and minds to change and eyes to open. And then we find later, as we move toward Jesus, that the prophet Isaiah says, and his name will be Emmanuel. God is with you. And we see the commander of the armies of the Lord saying, I'm not on anybody's side. The message is, I'm here. I'm with you. I love those people just as much as I love you, and I'm with you, and I will always defend the hopeless and the hurting. And so when a church postures itself to be a church in the neighborhood, we're not saying we're for the neighborhood. Let's get the drug dealers out. Let's push them out. Let's get those violent people with the guns. Let's get them. Let's get the police involved and start a war, and God will be on our side. No! We take the posture of Jesus, who says, I'm not anybody's side. I love my children, and I'm with them. And now the goal becomes for everyone to just have their eyes opened just enough to see and recognize that that's what is happening. The goal isn't going to be create a utopia of nice people. The goal is have everyone know and embrace and experience this reality that God is with. Which is why these little miracles happen, that for 30 years we can't get the star that communicates to the wise men, God is with you forever. And it stays hung up there on the ceiling, and it'll never come down because no one knows how to get it down. Your moments, your trauma, your abuse, your hurt, all the stuff that you've been trying to fix and somehow scrub off yourself until you make your skin bleed or even your soul feel like it's bleeding because you just want to be good again. You just want to be whole again. You just want to be right again. You just want to be able to be in the company of humans again and feel like you belong when you don't. It's the scrubbing that makes you feel like you don't belong. Because the whole time, through it all, God has been with you. He's had his sword drawn. And all he's asking is you to take off your shoes and acknowledge that he has set your moments and your life and your timeline apart. And it is holy. And God is redeeming it. And you don't have to do a thing. You don't have to give a penny to Edison Chapel. You don't have to go tell somebody about Jesus on the street. You don't have to pray extra hard or wake up at 5 a.m. and read your NIV student Bible, kids. You just need to open your eyes and see that God has made it holy. Because He loves you. And that's what Jesus is about. And we haven't always known it, but that's what the whole first half of this book is about too. Walking us to a place where we can see the holiness of what God is doing in our lives. Anna, can I share that? You can say no. Can I share the story of that one song you wrote? Because I noticed you're going to sing it, so I was like. Anna goes down to South America. She throws her guitar in. She ends up visiting a leper colony. Leprosy can be avoided, but oftentimes in poor communities, it's not. And once it starts, it's incredibly difficult to stop. And she finds herself in the room of a man named Isidro, who can no longer see and can barely feel, but he can hear. And he asks her if she'll play a song for him. So she starts to play, she starts to sing, and she watches him feel in his spirit the holy moment of acknowledging and seeing and knowing that even in all the pain, God is with. And nobody understood it, but something happened inside of Anna, and she didn't talk about it for like 2 years. And then she wrote this song one day. And I was just like, that's it. That's it. God is with us. And our job is to open our eyes and see it. I love when little kids run around in the sanctuary during church because it feels like we're on the beach with Jesus. Father, please help us open our eyes. Help us to take the shoes off of our hearts and recognize that there's nothing we need to scrub off of ourselves. You've made it all holy. And so all we have to say tonight is thank you.